Hi guys, and welcome back to Topic Tuesday. This is episode 16. If you've been here before and watched any of the previous episodes, then thank you so much. Your support is much appreciated. And if you haven't and you're new here, welcome. I'm so excited to have two very special people on the couch with me today. We've got Jay. And Brooklyn. Brooklyn is Jay's fiance, and we are here to talk all things kind of business, life, running a successful streetwear brand, and just having a really good chat. Now, I'm going to be honest, because I can't not tell you what's happened, because it's just not going to make sense. So we actually already once filmed this podcast earlier in the week, and it was unreal. We had such a good chat, but unfortunately behind us, there was like site demolition going on. The whole building was shaking.
Like World War II.
Yeah. It was so loud. We were all screaming over the microphone, like sat here juddering. And we thought like Carl, our amazing production guy, tried his best to make it work. But unfortunately, there was just one aspect that we weren't happy with, and we're all a bit of perfectionists, aren't we?
We are. Yeah.
So we were like, no, we're going to have to do this again. So if you hear me like referring back to, oh, in the week when we filmed the episode, because Jay and Brooklyn said some really good stuff, I want to make sure that's in this one too. So if you hear me referring to that, it's because we've already done
it. We have filmed.
But we're doing it again, which we're all cool with. We all made that
take
decision.
Two.
Yeah.
Literally. So we're going to start a bit different because I need to switch up a little bit. So we're going to start with a bit of Mr. and Mrs. I already said that you guys are fiance? Do you say that?
Sometimes we still, I'm kind of saying partner.
Okay.
Because if you're always fiance, used to say partner,
what is Jay?
It's fiance.
Fiance is like, it's a bit, it's like a long word. I can't
explain. He's the fiance.
Like, is that actually legit?
No.
Oh. So if you're just, the fiance, what's Jay?
He's still the fiance. It's just spelt different on paper.
It's so bougie. I love it. It must be a French word. It must be a French word.
Yeah, I don't actually know what we say. It just depends, isn't it?
You are the fiance as well.
Yeah.
It's just more, it's more a bit feminine.
At this point, we're basically married.
Yeah.
Right.
As well.
But actually referring back to last week, we haven't done wedding plans yet, have we?
No.
Go on, give us a little bit. Give us a little bit of an update before we get into it.
Right. Everything is on a backlog, I think, from like COVID. So in order to get the venue that you want, you're having to wait at least 2 years minimum for the date. So we went and saw one that we really liked, and they were like, yeah, there's no availability until
2026.
So we're kind of like not just like limiting ourselves to that. We're gonna get out there
elsewhere.
Look elsewhere just to see if we can get one sooner, but at the moment we're having no luck.
Yeah. It's got to be right though, hasn't it?
That's what I'm saying.
Especially your, I hate to think yours, like the, I just can't even begin to think.
It's all her, like, that's what I'm saying.
Are you not getting involved?
I will get involved, but not like that. Obviously, Brooke will handle like most of it, and I'll just add my little two pence in.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how big are we going to go?
Oh, we're not going to go big.
No.
Yeah, nah,
I wanted big before, but now I'm just like, do you know what? I don't think there's anything better than an intimate wedding.
And
it'll be a party though.
A nice big, because I mean, nice
like the
big
friendship
intimate
group, everything is going to be tight.
Yeah, it'll be lit.
Yeah,
it'll be so much fun.
It will be but
that's exciting though. So let's just break up a little bit. So I'm going to ask you some questions. Some are like Mr. and Mrs. style, and some are just like individual. And you've got to quick fire me back. There's no thing, too much thinking.
Okay.
And I'm not going to give you context. So whatever I ask you, I could be asking about food. I could be asking about the weather. But you just got to give me your immediate reaction back.
Go.
We'll go Jay first and then Brooklyn.
Okay. Let's go.
Hot or cold?
Hot.
Hot or cold?
Hot.
So is that hot, spicy food as well?
Ooh. Weird.
Yeah, I'd say the same.
What'd you order at Nando's?
Quarter chicken.
No, I mean spice.
Oh.
She's like,
not
garlic
the whole,
bread.
Not the whole order.
Halloumi on the side. Hummus.
Peri chips. Oh, actually, I'm very mango. Is it mango and lime?
No.
I'm peri.
But do they even do mango and lime anymore?
Yeah, peri tam.
But I didn't expect that from you.
Yeah, but then I'll get like a medium sauce.
What did you think we'd have?
Because I know you love Thai food.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And Thais generally can be hot. So I thought you'd be hot
really?
People. Yeah, I don't know why.
Certain Thai dishes, aren't it?
I like flavour. They're like sweet flavours.
Yeah. Coconut.
Like coconut rice is actually fire.
Yeah.
So sweet or savoury?
Sweet.
Ooh, savoury.
Sweet.
So you would take chocolate over a bag of crisps?
See, I don't really like chocolate like that.
But cake, you will.
Yeah, cake. See, cake, definitely. Cake, donuts, like, wait, yo.
Did you just say sweet?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're savory. I would take a bag of crisps over a chocolate bar any day.
Yeah, or I like would as crackers. I would as well, because I don't eat chocolate though, but if it was cake or crisps.
He's going cake.
Yeah, I'm going
What's
cake.
Your favourite cake?
Probably just like a plain sponge cake.
No.
Oh, no, no, sticky toffee.
No.
Banana cake. Yeah, banana cake.
I love how Brooke knows you better than
this. I know.
Honestly, even when we did the podcast last week.
I got to stay away from banana cake, though, because, yo, I'll eat the whole thing. So I'll tell you a story here. You see, in COVID, like, everybody was making these sprinkle cakes. So anyway, I was like to Brooke, I was like, yo, babes, you reckon you can, like, pattern a sprinkle cake? She's like, yeah, I got this. Anyway, she started making these sprinkle cakes. No word of a lie. I'd have one slice, then I'd eat the whole cake.
I came back downstairs and the whole cake was gone. A whole, you know, the tray.
Yeah. No, like, it wasn't that big.
It was about...
Like, yeah. It was big enough.
So were you all or nothing? Like one bite or the whole cake.
Once I started eating it, I was like, yo, that's this is fine. And then obviously
I'm a bit like that, you know. I'm all or nothing.
Wow.
Like, I'm a bite or the whole cake. Or like
a throw up.
Nothing. Yeah. I am a bit
that's like me with biscuits as well.
Oh gosh, yeah. The whole cake's
gone. Night in or night out? Nah, we're talking now.
Night in now.
Night in.
Me too. Who is the most stubborn in the relationship?
Ooh, me.
Yeah, that's like
you said sorry first.
I'll probably say Jay.
I feel like even I can answer some of it.
Yeah, Jay.
I always think Jay is so laid back.
Yeah.
So laid back. Yeah. And Brooke is fiery.
Yeah. Opposites attract.
They do. Who wears the trousers though?
Oh. I like to say me.
Yeah, she's going to want to say her. But do you know what it is like? It depends on the situation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Give me an example.
I think if it's sorting like, oh, I can't actually give an example.
Depends, like.
No.
Okay, for example, the wedding.
Yeah, you're going to wear the trousers.
Yeah, because I am going to want it how I want it. Yeah. Okay.
And then I know Brooke's got good style. So like, I'm like, yeah, I know Brooke's got good style. So I don't feel like I need to get involved in that. Do you know what I mean?
What was you going to say, Liz?
The house. Who's wearing the trousers?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because again, like, I know Brooke's going to pattern that too.
Yeah.
So when do you wear the trousers, babe?
So with the house, I'll get involved and
wears the trousers when it comes to the fine act.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bills and all of that stuff.
Jay, we need a sofa. Let's get the sofa. Yeah.
And with the house, my involvement's going to be like all the cool stuff, like the tech.
It's going to be wicked. So just TVs. On a side note, Jay and Brooke are also doing a bit of like a house move. So I know that that's a huge part of life right now for you guys. Okay, last one. What is Brooke's biggest fear?
Spiders.
Yeah. And what is Jay's biggest fear?
Rats and snakes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate rats and snakes too. Spiders I don't mind spiders.
Gosh, complete opposite.
Rats and snakes.
It's the snakes for me.
My dad sent me a video on snakes.
I wouldn't mind if there were just
if you were in the zoo and there was an opportunity to hold a snake, would you hold it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't be that scared.
No, wait. Have I done? Nah, I haven't done that before.
I wouldn't go.
No, I've held a spider. Nah, not a snake.
Okay, let's get into it. Jay, I would like you, for people who may or may not know you, I would just like you to briefly kind of like introduce yourself, how you would introduce yourself in this present time.
Okay, so my name is Jay and I'm the founder of Hoodrich.
And what is Hoodrich for those who don't know?
Hoodrich is a streetwear brand.
Yeah.
Based out of the UK, Birmingham to be exact.
Big up Birmingham. Did it for the city.
Yeah, for the hometown. And yeah, I don't know what else I'd actually say.
So in the last podcast, I was like, Hoodrich, in my opinion, and I think legitimately is probably the biggest streetwear brand in the UK. In my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. Jay probably disagrees.
I know.
Yeah.
We don't.
We're like fans over here. And you've done an incredible job. And I think it's really interesting to learn about Jay and Brooklyn's journey, because I think so much went on behind the scenes that no one knows. And Yeah. Like, would never know unless we spoke yeah. about it. And I think it's such an empowering, incredible journey. And I just really want to touch on it, not only for just to learn about them, but for anyone who's watching this who is a dreamer and a believer and wants to do something, not necessarily in streetwear or creating a clothing brand, but just in general, like chasing their dreams. Having Jay on the sofa, I think, is the perfect way to do that. Yeah. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So let's talk about Hood Rich.
Let's go.
One of the biggest, if not the biggest, streetwear brand in the UK. If you haven't seen it on the street, like, you must be living under a rock.
Yeah.
Because if you walk out, and especially if you didn't know beforehand, because maybe some of the audience are not into streetwear or know of Hood Rich,
yeah.
I swear to God, when you go out on the street now, every third person will be in something.
Oh, yeah. Rich.
It's crazy. Because when you think about it, and then you actually go out and you're like, oh my God, it's everywhere.
Everywhere.
Literally.
Well, I remember the time we didn't see any, like, a single soul in it. And I was saying as well before that your mum would come back and be like, Chase has seen someone in Hood Rich today. And I was like, where?
Yeah.
We don't see it. And then all of a sudden it was just went crazy.
Yeah. And she'd be really, like, specific with, you know, where she saw someone, or she remembered, like, what they were
what
wearing.
What they looked like as well. And she's like, yeah, Jay, I've seen it. And we're like, wow, we do not see it
yeah.
anywhere.
Because I remember, like, there was a time, yeah, where obviously we was doing what we was doing, but I'd go out and I wouldn't see every day. And then I just remember it just like, you go out and then you just see it every day. So yeah.
Nonstop. So let's talk about the journey a little bit. Before we talk on Hood Rich, let's learn a little bit more about your specific journey. So take us back to when you were 17, 18. I remember in the previous podcast we recorded, you touched on working in, you know, like yeah. Iceland and those things. Just paint that out again, because I okay. think it's an imperative part of
yeah.
who you are as a person. And one thing that I cling on to so much from the past podcast is that you said, I had no ego. The car you were driving, the life you were living, mm-hmm. yeah. so humble and so with it and not ahead of yourself. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I'll take it back all the way to like secondary school. That's where I got into streetwear. So in secondary school, I used to sell sweets. Just I'd make like mix-up bags and I'd go into school and I'd sell.
Sorry.
What was that?
My phone.
Wow.
Dropped.
Probably.
Sorry, continue.
And I'd sell sweets and I'd make like 50, 60 pounds a week, depending on how much sweets I'd sell. And I remember I'd always like go to JD Sports and I'd buy like a new jacket or something. So back in school, I kind of built up a reputation of being a kid that was fresh, fly. And then my friend introduced me to streetwear. So that's when I got into like American streetwear. I started to know about like brands from overseas. Fast forward, I left school. I went to college to study media. And then I worked in Iceland part time. So I was in college for 2 years. And then I was in Iceland as well till I was there in Iceland for 2.5 years. Left college, kept my job in Iceland, and I went to do an apprenticeship at an electronic cigarette company. So I was doing a 9-to-5 in an office. I remember it clearly, like going to office and like, it was just a small office and I had a computer and I was just making phone calls. I was making phone calls to shops, speaking to the managers and asking them how they were getting on with their stand and if they needed like replenishing and how they was getting on with the stock and just getting feedback, come off the phone, update on the notes and stuff. So Monday to Friday, 9-to-5. So you know what it is like that? I can relate to the 9-to-5 world. I've been there and I've done that. And I still kept my Iceland job on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So I was just working.
You're working 24/7.
Yeah. So I was just working a lot at that time. And then after that, my mom set up a before and after school club. So I left both my jobs and went to help her and worked as a play worker doing that. And I was 20 at the time. And that's when I decided, you know what? I'm just spending a lot of money on clothes. I don't have any savings. I didn't have any idea on what I actually wanted to do or be. And I just said to myself, I'm going to start a brand. To be specific.
Yeah, let's tell them the story.
Yeah.
When did that moment come?
So to be specific, I was at my parents' house. And, you know, I just remember coming out of the bathroom and just went into my bedroom. Brooke was just chilling on the bed. And it was just like, do you know what, babes? I'm going to start a brand. And then I think he asked me what I was going to call it.
What
are
you going to call it? Yeah.
And I said, I was going to call it Hood Rich. And my attitude was just like, yo, if it sells, it sells, like, I'll just try it.
But at first, you did want to make these clothes just for yourself.
Yeah, which I did. So I made like a couple of t-shirts for myself to start with initially. And then that's when everything else kind of happened where I made the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just a bit of like a brief backstory, obviously.
It's so interesting though. Like, I think people would think, I think people would never think the founder of Hood Rich worked at Iceland, had an office job, and then worked in a daycare.
Yeah.
Like, people look at success and maybe see it maybe as an overnight, like, or maybe he got lucky, or, you know, he just found a good one. But no, you actually, from day dot, you've been a disciplined hard worker and you've always had a strong work ethic in your bones.
Yeah.
And I think that's half of the success of Hood Rich, because it's all about your discipline as well.
Yeah.
And we touched on further in the week, you were just like, you were obsessed, weren't you?
With
the brand.
Yeah, yeah, like with the brand in the early days. I think as well, like, I want to just go back to Iceland. There was social media app at the time called Tumblr. Like, that was popular back then.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And
you still have your Tumblr?
Yeah, I've still got it, because that really, just like what I was seeing on there really inspired me. But at the time, you could write anonymous messages.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember, like, coming home after one of my shifts working on the tills in Iceland, and I checked my, like, anonymous messages, and somebody had written a message saying, ha ha, seen you in Iceland today on the tills. Guess that means you failed your GCSEs.
That is crazy, isn't it?
And I was like, yo, I remember seeing that thinking, okay, cool. Like, wow. Like, I know when I was much younger, I had like big aspirations and big dreams of like becoming something and becoming someone. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that like working in Iceland and just kind of living an average life isn't what I wanted for myself. I just hadn't figured out what I wanted to do. But yeah, that's just interesting. I think about that a lot, and I've still kept my Iceland discount card just to get like 10%. But it's just all these things. It just
makes you who you are.
Yeah. And it just makes me, I never want to go back to working on the tills. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
And I also think, like, obviously I have the privilege of knowing you, of like both of you as like close friends, but although of this huge success you've made, I think you're one of the most humble people I know. Like, you're not larish in your face about it. Yeah. You're still so grounded and such a family man and just so humble with it.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of background and those kind of jobs that you've worked, you're very in touch with what is also real, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people win and then a lot of people lose control when they win.
Yeah.
But you're so grounded.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great attribute of yours.
Nah, I appreciate it. Yeah.
And I also think, let's just quickly touch on it. Well, not quickly, because I think, I was actually saying to Seth in the car this morning, I was like, I don't think anybody knows the impact of Brooklyn on Hood Rich and the impact of your relationship on the success of yourself and you. And I think it's really important to talk about it, especially in this day and age where the grass is always greener and relationships aren't seen as so important in the fact of like working on them and being a real team. Talk to us about the team of you two and how it brought such like fruitfulness to not only you as a pair, but also the business.
When I first, I was going to say first discovered you. When I first heard about Jay, I was in school and I would like meet up in like the town centre and they had like a group of friends and they were like, oh my gosh, going crazy over this one boy. And he went to a school in Birmingham, obviously closer to where Jay lived. And I was like, who's this boy? And he's like, oh, it was Jay's brother. But at the time, I didn't know him or Jay. And they're like, oh, he's got an older brother. And I was like, older brother? I kind of liked the older ones then. Still do, obviously, Jay. And I was like, wow. Like, and then I was just kind of getting to like know about his brother. And then I'd see his brother out and at times. And then knew about Jay. And then he's like his family. And I was like, oh, like I love their unit, like they're such like a lovely, like close family. And it was just like so interesting to see. And then Your story's completely different.
Yeah, so I was in, I can't remember the year, but I was in Jamaica. And when you go to Jamaica, those people, everyone knows, when you go to the hotels, there's loads of people from like different areas. So I made friends with like a group of people from London. And one of the friends that I'd made, he was like, obviously he knew that I was from Birmingham, and he was like, yo, I know about this girl from Birmingham. And he was showing me a picture, and he was like, oh, mixed race, green eyes. And then he showed me, and it was Brooke. Mm-hmm.
Well, you didn't know me at this point.
Yeah, I didn't know Brooke at the time. And obviously that was like years ago. So that was the first time that I actually saw Brooke, like, and kind of, well, saw a picture.
Yeah, and then fast forward. We then had mutual friends, mm-hmm. and we met at a house party. In the area that we ended up.
Yeah, yeah. So we met at a house party. We were speaking, though, before that on, like, Twitter.
Yeah, social media and stuff. And
then...
Was it love at first sight?
It was love at first sight.
Do you know what's mad? Do you know where we actually first met? It was at that... Whose party was it on Broad Street at the
hotel? No, that was the second time.
Was that the second time?
Get it right. It was the second time. First, it was Canterbury Close.
Oh, okay.
The house party.
Yeah.
And then
it was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. And then
over 10 years
ago. Yeah, no. And then we left it at that. I knew he was interested, and I was like, ooh, okay.
Playing hard to get.
Yeah, just, you know, nothing. And then we kicked it off.
Okay,
at the hotel party on Broad Street.
My bad.
We've literally met
full circle
moment. In the area that,
you know,
we got a house together.
Yeah.
And then the second time when we kicked it off, we now live in that area. That's mad.
Like, yeah, it's crazy.
It is mad.
And since you guys met, you literally like obsessed with each other and spent all your time together.
Yeah.
Which is correct.
Yeah.
Which is why I always say that Brooklyn's involvement in the business and her support is so imperative to the journey, in my opinion. I don't know if you would agree, but kind of just the stories you were telling before, like, just think it's crazy how you were always kind of there and giving support, and both emotionally. I think that's so important.
Yeah.
You know? Like the emotional support that a partner can give to another when mm-hmm. they are running something to this size.
Obviously, when you're in a relationship as well, and you're like witnessing your partner doing a brand like from the ground up, you are also emotionally invested in that, because what they go through is what you go through, mm-hmm. and you're always trying to like problem solve together. And that's just it. As much as it's like, obviously it's Jay's brand, but as much as it's Jay's brand, it's also mine. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just how you feel like, because it's like we are a unit, like we are just one.
And going back to the days where you were at your mom's house, because you were, when you guys got together and became obsessed with each other, Brooklyn was like, I never wanted to leave his side. So you spent a lot of time at each other's parents' house, but at your mom's house, you spent a lot of time, and that was where kind of Hoodrich started to, think of it like a tree, grow.
Yeah.
So talk to us about that. So what was the initial investment to start?
So I started Hoodrich with £200. I got 30 t-shirts made, 15 white, 15 black. And I remember, like, when I went to pick up the t-shirts, obviously Brooke would come with me. And I just remember, like, being, obviously I'm driving, she's in the passenger seat.
She? In the passenger seat.
That's in good.
Seat.
God. Passenger seat.
It's a bit of a tongue twister, that.
It is.
And I used to printed my first t-shirts on Gildan. So for those that know, a lot of people start out with Gildan. Not the best quality now, but obviously back then it is what it is. And like Brooke was like cutting out the labels, like making sure it was all perfect, folding them. And then I'd just drive around and I had sales, and like the first t-shirts all got sold out of the boot of my car. I didn't have a website for a little while, to be honest.
It was just kind of like people, you know, friends, mm-hmm. like selling around the area.
It just started off like really small, just really small. Mm-hmm. Obviously I didn't know anything about running a brand as well. So I'm just using kind of like Google, using my initiative just to do a lot of research. Mm-hmm. But one thing I'd say is I was just active. Like I was on it. Just trying to always look for new ways to do things, and just wanted to just see how far I could take it, really.
And you said to me in the week, you were like, oh, you know, we'd be in bed at like 9 p.m. and someone would call and be like, yo, bro, I'm going out. I need a t-shirt. And you would get up, get in the car with Brooke, and you would go and give him that t-shirt.
This could happen at like any time of the night. Yeah. It could literally be like someone's decided to go out at 11 and we're like, oh gosh, we need to get in the car. And just because it was like we were there like watching a film, I could always just go with him.
So
get in the car and just do the journey. And we'd always meet up. There was one car park, what was it called? In Erdington.
Maplin's car park.
Was literally like the spot to meet everyone. Because like we also didn't want anyone to know like where we were based and lived. Because obviously you just meet, you could be meeting random people as well at times. So we always met at Maplin's car park. And I'd just be in the car and Jay would be in the boot. Showing sizes, like, will this fit you? And it was fine.
That's what I'm saying. It's crazy.
But I think that, like, these little snippets in your story is why, like, when I look at it from an outsider's view, like, why you are successful. Because so many people would have maybe received that phone call and been like, not tonight, bro.
Not tonight,
like, I'm tired, I'm with my girl.
Or exactly as well. I feel like a lot of people do get distracted by having, like, a partner that you're trying to focus on and stuff like that. Whereas I don't think that ever...
Nah, I just think, like, I was really focused on the brand and what I needed to do with the brand. And obviously I was with Brooke and Brooke was just kind of like, obviously my partner at the time and just supporting me. So it was just like, I'm leading and I'm doing what I need to do. And Brooke is just with me every step of the way. So that's just kind of how it worked. I just feel like, yeah, when I look back and think about, you know, how far we've come and why we've been able to come, it's just, you've got to be a team. Like, if, for example, if I'm leading and I'm saying, like, we're doing this, I need Brooke to cooperate with me and be able to, like, work with me on whatever we're doing. So I think that's what, you know, we did over the years and we just built that up and then we learned a lot from each other. And I've learned a lot from Brooke and, you know, she's learned a lot from me because you got to remember, females think differently about things.
Say that again.
So I think one thing that has helped me is you get to have a female perspective on things. Now, I'll go to Brooke with whatever, she'll give me her perspective. Whether I listen to that or take the advice, that's up to me. You. But it's good to have that different perspective.
Yin and
so
yang,
I can in my thoughts throughout, you know, me building a business, they've not been like one dimensional, you know.
So important. I think it's really, really important. Obviously, I've never done a clothing business. I don't know what it takes. I don't know what it feels like. But I think having, you know, each other in the journey, I think is just incredible. So you were kind of at the very initial beginning, it was very small. You were doing it for yourself. You were into streetwear, the baggy style, American vibe. You're getting these t-shirts printed, selling them out the back of your car. It's all, it's like the fairy tale story when you think about
literally.
It. Then what then started to propel you? So kind of what then accelerated quickly and where, tell us the steps next that you took from taking it from a little bedroom brand, and the boxes are in your mom's house, and you're just connecting with friends for them to wear a t-shirt on a night out. Tell us then the next step.
So basically, when I first started the brand, I was running it from my parents' house, and we'd have like boxes in the corridors and everything. And that started, it started to get to a stage where it was like, okay, I reckon I could take on a small office space now. So ended up getting a small office space in Aston.
You say small, Jay. Well, I don't remember it being small.
Yeah, it was a good size.
It was a really good size.
It wasn't...
Yeah, it wasn't like really small.
It wasn't huge, but it was not small.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the square foot would be.
It weren't that small because you had to...
So and you it was, it was a decent size. But yeah, that getting into what happened there is a whole nother story. But anyway, we had that for a period of time, but then couldn't afford to with the upkeep of the office. So ended up moving back into my parents' house and I had an office in like the back room. Then from there, just running the brand. At this point, I was doing everything. So for the first 3.5 years, it was just kind of, obviously Brooke was helping me and stuff, but it was mainly just like me doing everything from like sitting with the designers, going to pick up the product from the screen printers, building, I built websites, I learned how to use Shopify, picking and packing orders.
You were doing everything.
Like, yeah. literally folding clothes, polybagging it, putting the size labels
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Customer service, I've been a photographer, I've been a model. Yeah. I've done everything. So that's what was happening for the first 3.5 years. Then this is where it gets really interesting, because this is where I say is the turning point for the brand. So checked my Instagram DMs one day and I had a message from the Foot Asylum buyer. And I checked the message and he basically reached out and said, "Hello, Jay, really impressed with what you've been building, been following the brand for the last, you know, couple of years, just keeping a close eye on it. I can see that, you know, it's going somewhere. Is there any chance we could meet up and have a talk and see if there's any room to kind of maybe put a small collection of Hoodrich in to Foot Asylum?" So then I scrolled up and he'd messaged me before and I was like, shit, I've missed like, it. Yeah, because I looked at that as like a huge opportunity.
Oh, of course. Yeah. It is a huge opportunity.
Yeah, it's still now. And then it was. Yeah. It was like, wow.
Because one thing back then, no streetwear brand had gone into like a
mainstream store.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Foot Asylum, like a true streetwear mm-hmm. brand. So then a couple of weeks later, I actually got an email from my then business partners. So they reached out to me, and one of them, he was the ex-agent for Rockaware, which is Jay-Z's brand, and he had owned a streetwear store in East London back in the day. So I was like, you know what, these guys are worth having a chat with. And I remember me and my friend Tom, who he like studied business, he's a lot more, you know, smarter than I am. Just to give everybody a bit of background, I'm like a very creative person. I'm not really like business savvy like that. So my friend who's more, you know, into that sort of stuff, he came with me and we had 2 meetings. Mm-hmm. And after the second one, he kind of told me, just said, look, this is, you know, what they're offering. And I made the decision and I said, look, I'm going to do it. So I took the risk of giving away 50% of my company. And I remember actually one of my business partners said to me at the time, he said, look, 50% of something is better than 100% of nothing. And, you know, going back as well, Brooke will be able to, like, Hoodrich, it kind of, it wasn't really going anywhere.
No, so I feel like he was
at that time.
Crossroads. He was at like a standstill. Yeah. And I think as well, finances were like the main thing for you. And when you had that message from Foot Asylum,
yeah,
at that point it was like, oh my gosh, like all your hard work has paid off. Like you've done this on your own, you've built your brand.
This could be your break.
Someone has recognized your hard work, your brand for what it is. This is going to be great. But when you got stuck into that and you was like speaking to them, it was like you can't actually afford to get the stock that they want.
Okay.
Because it was a lot that you had to invest into it first, because how it works is it would come out of Jay's pocket mm-hmm. for all the stock they want, and mm-hmm. then he would get paid after with they receive it. So at that time, it was like
an injection of investment yeah, to get it in there.
Yeah.
But you didn't have the finances.
Jay didn't have it. No. So,
wow.
And it was like, it was perfect timing, because then your business partners at the time
were able to do that.
And they come at the
Perfect time. And just to touch on, it's not necessarily just finances as well. Like, there's like experience, knowledge, knowing how the industry works, logistics. Yeah. Like, there's so much to it. So, like,
yeah, there was a lot.
There's a lot to it. So, like, as I got into it, I used to turn around and I'd say to Brooke and I'd say to my parents, I'd be like, money isn't everything, you know. It's like someone could have given me like 100K. It's the knowledge, and it's, you've got to know
where to take the brand,
the operation.
Yeah, man, yeah. And how to like leverage certain things. There's so much that I've learned. So it's not just money. I think it's a combination of obviously finance.
It's just everything, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely.
Obviously, you have a certain skill, and you've never had the experience, or he's never been in this position before where he has been running a business his it's his first time. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and they were a lot older. Like your business partners were like 70.
72.
72 and...
And...
50.
Yeah, yeah.
Knowledge is power. Yeah. They really had that and, to help.
Yeah.
At the time, that no, that's how old they are now.
They were younger.
Yeah, they were younger then.
And I remember you saying earlier in the week, you were like, you kind of already alluded to it, but I just think it's really pivotal. Like you were at a point where you were like, I don't know where to go with this. Like Hoodrich wasn't exactly thriving both financially and in other ways. And it was kind of like that moment. It was like that shining star that kind of was in the universe coming to get you. Definitely. And it just propelled you into kind of like another dimension, mm-hmm. going into Foot Asylum and having that, those two business partners. You were like, that was my break.
Yeah. That's definitely when I look back. That's when everything changed, because when we got into Foot Asylum and I got into business with my business partners, that's when we was able to build a team.
Mm-hmm.
Before all of this, I used to sit in my parents' house and I'd watch a lot of, it wasn't really podcasts at the time. I was watching a lot of other brand owners, like on YouTube vlogs, American brand owners, and like how they were running their business. And one thing I picked up on early was you need a team. So it was like, yeah, from then I knew that I needed a team for it to become successful and to grow. So then when I got with my business partners, I was able to start, have a small team. What we did was we had two offices, one in Birmingham and one in Watford. In Watford, there was two people, my two business partners at the time. And then there was me and another guy who's not with the brand anymore. So it was just like four of us. And it just, yeah, it was just working away. So when I first got into business, what we did was we needed a designer. So I put out something on Instagram looking for somebody who can design. Somebody got back to me. I ended up meeting them in town. They lived in Warsaw. We went Southridges. I told them about like what the brand means and what it represents. And before we was able to get another office, I was working in his house and I'd be there till like early hours of the morning, just sat next to him, just like working on designs. We was basically building a collection for Foot Asylum at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we was working on product to relaunch the Hoodrich website. So, yeah, and then cut a long story short, we ended up getting another office back in the same building that I was in
before. Full circle moments again.
Yeah.
So I was like, called up Alison. I
can afford it now.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, Alison, look, man, you know, I always paid my rent on time before. I need an office again now. So then, yeah, they was able to sort me out. Then it was just us two.
And that was for a long time.
Yeah.
That was a good amount of time.
Yeah, it built slowly. And then what happened was like people who were like working with the brand on like a freelance basis, when it was time to grow, I just kind of brought them in. Then we had like the start of what I'd call the core foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just built from there. We've hired and we've had to let people go and people haven't been right for the brand.
When you had your business partners come in and you went into Foot Asylum, then what happened? Because I know other companies came for you and I think JD Sports contacted you. And I feel like that's when Hoodrich really began to get its recognition. I mean, you're in a high street store, like you're in Foot Asylum. I know it's still popping now. I don't know if it's popping as much, but back then.
Also a big thing as well, like when you first started your brand, like you was into streetwear and... When JD and Foot Asylum, obviously you built the brand off being into streetwear.
Mm-hmm.
So you use very like a bit more like urban, underground kind of vibe. But then when JD and Foot Asylum reached out, there was a big decision that you had to make whether you wanted to go commercial or not.
Interesting.
And that was like a big conversation that we had for so long. And we're like, oh my gosh, you just got to like weigh out the options. Like, what is your vision for your brand? Mm-hmm. Like, do you want to...
Yeah.
Do you want to be the first, not the first, but like a streetwear brand to go into a commercial?
To cross over.
Yeah, to cross over in that sense. And it was obviously the best idea, the best decision that you ever made, I think, personally.
Yeah.
Because at the time, I don't think that JD and Foot Asylum had anything like Hoodrich.
Because I think, so just touching on what Brooke was saying, before Hoodrich, there was no, as I said, I think I said it previously in the podcast, there was no streetwear brands that existed in a commercial space, but also existed in like the, they had their own website where they would sell their own products, basically. So I had to make a decision whether I wanted to like cross over into that commercial space with Foot Asylum. There was a couple of things that helped me make that decision. I remember when I was like selling online and stuff, people used to say this, they were seeing Hoodrich in like different areas. This was before, you know, it went into any stores, and different types of people were wearing it. So that let me know that, okay, Hoodrich is, you know, there's more to it, more. It's not just people that are into like underground streetwear that want to wear it, like different people. So I thought that, you know, it's a good opportunity. It will give the brand exposure and it will open a lot more doors. And my thought process at the time was that Hoodrich will go into Foot Asylum and it will make people who wouldn't necessarily go into Foot Asylum go in there to check out the brand or just to see what Hoodrich is all about. So we went into Foot Asylum and then we were trading really well. And then JD came knocking on the door.
They were like, we want a piece of that.
And that was really crazy because Foot Asylum wanted to keep us exclusive. So I remember I was 25 at the time. And I remember me and my business partner, I'm 30 now, so this was 5 years ago. We went down to Foot Asylum. We had to have a meeting with all the top people. We were sitting in this boardroom, this big table. And they were saying, you know, they were actually saying to me, you know, we don't think that going into JD is a good idea. You should stay exclusive with us. And I just remember thinking that JD Sports, you know, obviously it's a reputable company. And what I liked about JD is they had the ability to offer us international doors, which was a lot more growth. And now we are an international brand. So, you know, I remember just saying to them, look, I'm 25 years old and I've got to take this opportunity. I just feel like it's the right thing to do. I ended up taking the opportunity and we went into JD Sports November 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ever since we've just been working with them, growing with them. And, you know, we've got an international brand and people, they'll go into JD and they'll see, do you know what I mean? I don't really need to say too much, but yeah.
And so no regrets in that sense as to them saying, we don't think this is right for you. I mean, a bit cheeky. Is that not, that's just them but being.
They wanted to keep it exclusive. They wanted to keep
you, of course any brand would do that, but don't know necessarily if that's in the best interest of you and like actually the growth of Hoodrich. Yeah. And would you say when it went into JD, it really took a level up in terms of exposure, sales?
Yeah, that's when like really you start to see it every day, I suppose.
Yeah.
The brand just grew.
I remember it was, I think we both did it though. So I think
we went put halves to like a collector.
200 in and you put 200 in.
Yeah, probably was a bit more than
a bit more. So we halved it basically. And I was like, yeah, I just really want to like do the women's collection. And I remember like sitting, I don't know how we did the designs though. Who did we sit with?
Was it Sketch?
But they were so, they were so like,
I remember.
Yeah. They were very basic at that time. It was like a grey long sleeve with Hoodrich on.
It was still good though. It was still good. A lot of girls tapped into it.
Yeah, and we did the first. I remember sometimes as well, I tried, we bought a screen printing machine.
Nah, it was a heat press machine.
Heat press machine, sorry. Yeah. And I was like, I'm adamant I can heat press on these clothes myself. So
it was mad. Yeah.
We've got like pictures of me like in the office and we like testing this heat pressing machine, doing like the other women's collection. And then we did the first shoot with our friend Daisy. And and then it just, we kind of just had to leave it because the
men's
was growing so much that
I think probably right then in that stage your energy wasn't there for it.
Yeah.
If it fizzled out, it's because
and because of obviously it's Jay's brand, like his energy has to be there for women's as well, not just mine. Yeah, so I was like, 100%. You know what? Okay, let's just leave women's.
Sorry, side note. Do they stock women's in store now or is it just men's?
Yeah.
There's women's as well?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
My gosh, it used to be called Hoodrich Honeys.
Yeah, that is a throwback.
We used to call it Hoodrich Honeys.
Do you know, we haven't even, because We had the 120s tops at when I did the takeover event, remember?
Yeah. Oh, you got to tell them about that. I haven't kept anything.
Please, please, please tell them about the event that you did way back.
When one of the things that I wanted to do with Hoodrich was just see how I could make, like, just do it differently. So it's like, I want to do an event. So I decided to came up with the name, the Hoodrich Takeover Event. It was like £1 entry. There was food there. There was clothes for sale. There was a live DJ. It was just like a vibe. Like, people would just come in, chill in. So that's when I had some of the Hoodrich Honeys tops for sale there. But I did two of them events. The first one was really good. It was a success. So I did the second one. The second one I got Mr. Perform at the second one.
It was, yeah, it was crazy.
But tell us about the t-shirts that you ordered.
Oh, yeah.
And then Yeah.
Then you have to tell the
laptop
story.
So was this before that event, though? This was for like an... Was it like your first online drop or something?
No,
it was for the event. You said
it was for the event. Yeah, the first event.
Okay.
With
the spelling mistake.
Yeah. So basically, I was getting stuff made in Pakistan, stuff like manufactured overseas, and sent off all the like the designs, tech packs, or whatever. Not even tech packs at the time, just the artwork files. Paid. The product had been delivered, and you know, I'm just opening it up. I'm just trying it on. There was a few things that was wrong. So the first thing was, I was trying on one of the long sleeves, and Brooke noticed that there was a spelling mistake.
Yeah. So I'm literally just, we're in your parents' house now in your bedroom, and you're like by the window and your back's towards me, and he's like, oh yeah, these are the new shirts, and he's kind of giving me like a show of the new stuff. And I was like, okay, nice, like, I like these. And then he turned around and he was like in a circle, wasn't it? And then writing going down. And what did it say? Or meant to say?
It was meant to say remain relevant.
Remain relevant. So I'm like reading like the t-shirt and I was like, remain relevant? Yeah, remain relevant. I was like, Jay. A part of me didn't want to say it. I was like, oh, because I knew how many was ordered and how huge this was for Jay. And I was thinking, oh no, that's Jay's dyslexia.
Yeah, basically.
If you didn't know, Jay has, you don't have like, it's not.
That's another story.
It's not severe, but you know, you have mild dyslexia.
Yeah,
so
dyslexia.
So I was reading, I was like, Jay, it says remain relevant. He literally turned around because his back was towards me. And he was like, you're joking. I was like, no. It says remain relevant. What's it supposed to say? He was like, shit. Took the t-shirt off. He put it on the bed and he was like, oh, shit. He was just going crazy. And I was like, oh, no. I was just sitting there in silence. I didn't know what to do.
Because you had so many of them.
So many.
Yeah, we had a lot. And we had like woven labels as well on the hoodies. Was able to pick them off. But as well, the prints on the hoodies, the prints was terrible. So yeah.
It was just a bit of a fail.
Yeah, it was a bit of a fail. But you know what? Despite that, still sold them.
You still sold
them.
That's when you know you're probably when you can sell it with.
Just, not everything sold.
I wonder
but
if someone's still got a vintage Remain Velvet.
Let's know if anyone has a Remain Velvet.
I know, man.
Top.
I'd be interested to see. Someone's got to have one somewhere.
All part. I feel like it's all part of the journey, though. You're gonna take L's, and that's a bit of an L. So fast forward on to you're in JD, you're in Foot Asylum, you've got your business partners, you've got that injection of cash, you've got that financial knowledge, power, those people with experience, they are a lot older than you.
Yeah.
Then what happened? Because we're probably now going into 2020, like the past 3 years, kind of then what was the journey?
So So was in the office in Aston till COVID. So pre-COVID, we built up the team in Birmingham. There was four of us. Mm-hmm. And we was just working with retail, obviously, Foot Asylum. JD was really early at that time. I had gone on a few trips I'd been to Nepal. To like look at factories, because that's where we was getting clothes made originally. That was like a really good experience. Mm-hmm. Then, quite a long story short, the quality of Nepal wasn't good enough for what I wanted to put into shops. So we moved everything to Turkey, Istanbul. So I did a few trips over there. And I remember going to Istanbul, like not everything went smooth at first. There was a lot that I had to learn, and there was a lot that we had to implement because, you know, the standard of the quality, I wanted it to be of a certain standard. So that was a bit of a roller coaster. Ended up getting that all sorted out. Then we kind of hit COVID. COVID was interesting because the brand actually grew in COVID.
Amazing.
But it was hard because it was like, we're a creative brand and we have to be creative in our houses and do loads of Zoom calls. I remember like I was getting tracksuits delivered to the house I was like putting them on and Brooke was like taking pictures of me, and we were using them as ads
for Hood Rich. This was crazy. Like you was in JD and Footers time, so like that is
it was in JD
and you'd come, but your business partner was like, Jay, just come on, be the model in your home. It was like,
we had to do something. Like, I feel like COVID tested people and businesses in so many different ways. And like, you had to kind of like adjust and adapt.
Yeah.
And some made it work and some didn't. It was like, well,
we were doing
some wild
photography.
Yeah.
I was like standing on the sofa and Jay's getting like chilling, chilling like this. And I'm over him, like,
yo, it was actually
and they loved it. They used it as one of the ads.
Yeah, and it was a really good performer. So yeah, we just got creative in COVID, and we just kind of did what we had to do. I think as a company, we just kind of made the decision to keep our foot on the gas, and that was the best thing that we did, because when we came out of COVID, we still had that momentum.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's wild that so many people were buying, you know, to see
just
their
had
home.
That thought. Like, I just had that thought. I don't think people realize people were buying in COVID. Like, I think performance for a lot of
it's
companies
mad.
In
I
that
think
sense.
It was boredom because
but people were
no one could go out.
Yeah, people were spending money, and also in a way, I know it was a super hard time and furlough, and a lot of people lost their jobs, and it was really, really. A crazy time.
It was a hard time.
But for others, they were saving so much money.
Yeah.
No commute to work. You know, like little things like not having to spend money for lunch. People were saving a lot of money.
Spending. Yeah. It was true. Crazy. We didn't think that that's what would happen. We thought, gosh, you know, everyone's losing their jobs.
Yeah.
We're even not able to, like, I couldn't go to work. You couldn't go to work, obviously. So it was like, how is your business going to grow?
Yeah, so fortunate though, honestly.
I know.
When I think back to that, because just hearing a lot of other business owner stories about COVID, it just kind of put it into perspective, and, you know, just blessed to be able to get through COVID and still have a, you know, a lucrative business on the other side. So yeah, we had someone who I can't say for legal reasons that wanted to acquire the brand first.
And what does acquire mean? But in the week, I didn't know what it meant.
Basically buy. But basically, like, what happened was, so my two business partners are older, and the oldest one, you know, when I got into business with him, he said, look, this is my last climb up the ladder. And he will be retiring in, you know, a few years. So I always knew that that was going to come. I didn't know what it was going to look like exactly. So we'd had discussions, and, you know, I had a few different options. I could either sell all of my equity, which was my 50% of Hood Rich, which I never really wanted to do. Or I could kind of construct a deal which kind of made sense for me in terms of wanting to stay on. So I kind of said, you know what, I want to keep a percentage and then I'll sell the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I ended up saying, like, I'm willing to sell 40%. I'm going to keep 10%. The first people that came along, you know, they were happy with that. The deal got all the way down the line and they just pulled out.
Do you know why?
You can't. Yeah, I do, but I can't say, because the roller coaster that we went through when you're doing that, because obviously you're getting like lawyers involved.
Yeah,
everything's got right.
But obviously, as well, it's a huge step to take in a business, especially for somebody who's never been in a position before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think even for us, it was like a lot to digest, and we were then trying to like make plans for the future, and it was just so crazy. So yeah, then with that falling through, it just,
yeah,
it did emotionally as well, like affect us, I think. Like,
yeah, I think you just kind of,
because I was still digesting the fact that he was actually selling. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I remember the first time he almost had a heart attack. I was like, what?
I doubt like, it's a lot better, obviously.
You cannot.
That's Brooke being like emotional.
Yeah. But now, like, it took me time and I was like, okay, I completely understand.
Because
like,
I'm thinking about, I'm planning for the future. So if I've got the opportunity to secure our family, like obviously we haven't got our family yet, but like the future of our family, like as the man and as the, you know, the provider, I need to be making the right decision. Yeah. Not like making an emotional decision. Like, oh,
that's where he wears the trousers.
Not making an emotional decision. Like, oh, it's my baby and it's,
I don't want to let it go.
Do you know what I mean? Like I had to get into my thinking logical business bag. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And just be like, right, this is a good opportunity. It will enable us to be, you know, good and and set. So that's where my thinking was at. So anyway, that deal went through. Business carried on as normal. It was a bit of a weird time at first.
Mm-hmm. I think it really did like affect you in some way though, because I think you had your hopes up and you kind of felt settled from the first one, and you had all these plans. You're like, okay, I feel like I've achieved everything I've wanted to now. And then it's like that just got taken away.
Yeah.
So it did, your mood completely changed for like a whole year until the next one.
Yeah, so I had to just kind of suck it up and carry on. But again, that's all part of like business, isn't it? Like you've got to be resilient. You've got to keep going no matter what. And to be honest, nobody in the company actually knew. So that's another thing. So like, obviously Brooke knew, and me and my business partners knew, but nobody who worked for the company knew. So anyway, my business partner calls me and he's like, Jay, we've had some early conversations with a company. They're called Iconics. They're an American company. They know all about you. They know all about your story. We've let them know that you would like to retain 10% and you're willing to sell 40, and they're cool with that. So I was like, all right, cool. This sounds good. But my business partner was like, we still got to have a few conversations because they're doing a bit of like
due diligence.
So left it for a bit just because you know what it
was. You don't want to get too deep again.
Nah, because learned from that.
You got your guard up then.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I've been through this before. I'm just going to carry on. I'm just going to act like it's not going to happen.
Probably the best way as well.
Yeah. We literally acted like it wasn't going
to
happen.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. Even to like the last point. But anyway, ended up meeting the guys. So one of them flew in from America and Iconics have got office based in the UK. So I met the two guys who were constructing the deal. Just told them a little bit about myself, you know, my story, what I want, where I want Hoodrich to go, you know, what I want the brand to achieve. They bought into that. They were aligned. So that was all cool. Worked with my lawyer on constructing like my contract and, you know, all the little key points. Was happy with that. And then the process had started really, and it just went on for months to get it over the line.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of like Zoom calls with lawyers going through like SPA, which is something called sales purchase agreement.
The whole of last year was just stress.
So when you're, sorry, just to kind of some like, if anyone is thinking what I'm thinking, this will clarify it. So when your business came on board, two business partners came on board. Did they take 25% each to make up that 50%? Then you had 50%. They sold completely.
They're
out.
And they've exited and sold but stayed on.
So two business partners gave it all up to Iconics. You gave up 40. So now Iconics has got 19, you've got 10.
Yeah.
Just to anyone out there that just needed that little like, that summary. Because in my head, I'm like, no way, I just need to
be it's so confusing. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But that, it's not, I wouldn't say it's confusing. I just really need to There's a lot.
And do you know what's mad? Like, I do a lot of reading and listen to a lot of podcasts, and I didn't know that. I thought that what's his name now? Jeff Bezos owned like a lot of Amazon, but he only owns a small percentage. And just listening to people, like, there was a saying they'd rather have a slice of a watermelon than have a whole grape. Basically saying, you know, they'd rather have something, a small percentage of something that's big rather than have a big percentage. Yeah. So
wow,
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now
some free game.
So it went through the line.
Yeah.
It was all public news, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
It actually.
It was what, sorry?
Like public news. It was in the news and everything.
It was in the news. Yeah, it was.
It was. My dad was speaking to me about it. I was like, how did you see that? He's like, is it
news? Yeah, it was.
So before that, like, I had calls with like people from press and they were like asking me questions and I had to like write up a bit of a statement.
But you wanted to keep it all under wraps though, but that was just out of your control. It's
like, Yeah,
Mr. Private over here.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Again, just like even doing this podcast, I'm kind of putting myself out there a bit more now.
Love it.
And just obviously we're still private, but just not as private.
Giving them a taster. Yeah,
just giving them an insight. I just think it helps and puts things into perspective because people don't know. Do you know what I mean?
And I always say to Jazz, like, your story is just so real.
Compelling.
And can be so relatable to so many people. That I think it's good to tell your story because people will just learn from you and, you know, they're probably in your position that you was in 10 years ago or whatever because they're like younger or whatever and they won't know what steps to take. They might even think that selling their business is like they're never going to do it because that's what we were like, well, you were like at the very beginning.
Yeah. But when I was 20, someone said, I remember saying,
yeah.
I remember saying, nah, I'm never selling. I'm never selling.
But and like, that's why when you told me, I was like, what? Remember when you said you was never selling?
And so now at this present day, 2024, you've still got 10%.
Yeah.
Still a shareholder and everything.
Yeah. Which, sorry to cut you, was super important because, you know, if I'm going to stay up, like I agreed to stay on as the founder and I just wanted invested interest. And I just think that, you know, like I wake up and I'm like, 10%. I've still got my purpose.
Yeah.
Still go to the office. I get involved in certain projects. You know, I don't like the team they get on with all the day today. If they need me or if they want my opinion on something, that's just kind of how we work. But just having that invested interest, especially when it was my baby, that does mean a lot to me. Do you know what I mean?
So Do you ever think you'll just hang up the boots completely and say there's a 10% and completely remove yourself from Hoodrich?
Do you know what? Because I sold 40%, I'd like to say, and I didn't think I was going to sell 40%, I'd like to say, who knows? Part of me knows that Hoodrich has got the potential to be a huge company, so I want to keep 10%.
Yeah.
And
also you want to grow, you still want to grow.
You still want to have your brand.
I think selling 40% was enough. Because, for example, when people sell, they then have capital which they look to invest. So I just looked at it as like,
that is your investment.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, that is my investment. And I just,
What would you say are some of the biggest hurdles that shocked you to this day, having the brand 10 years or whatever? What were some of the biggest hurdles that really took you back?
I think back in the day when I didn't have a lot of money, spending a lot of money on getting things manufactured overseas and then they came and they were wrong.
That must have been such a kick in the teeth.
I remember you took the foot, like basically I ordered, this was separate to the spelling mistake. I ordered some jackets, and I remember putting the hoods on, and the hoods, I couldn't get my head through the...
Oh my God, yes.
No, and I've got a picture of that.
Yeah, yeah, couldn't get
my, and the shape of the hoods was all off. So I think...
I mean, if you can't fit your head through it, you know.
Yeah. Like, I was like, come on, like, how, like... How tight have you made the hole that you can't get your head through? So
those are some of your biggest, like... hurdles that you really had to...
Yeah, I think when I think back, I think the hardest thing, though, is building a team and people. Mm-hmm. That is hands down the hardest.
And
people.
It still is to this still day. Is. One of the hardest things.
I've got a running joke, and I just say, you know, having a team and pulling up to the office every day is a bit like what's going to happen on today's episode of EastEnders.
Yeah.
Like, because...
Ooh, the drama.
Yeah. I feel like there's always...
Yeah, there is. There's always...
Yeah, running teams of people and companies. Yeah. It's hard.
There's so many different characters in the
like,
room.
Everyone's, like,
not
different.
Not everyone thinks the same.
Yeah.
You've got emotions in there. Right? Yeah. You've got ladies in there.
Females, males, exactly.
Yeah. Hoodrich is predominantly females, isn't it, the team?
It's crazy because it never started like that. It was predominantly males. It's because we're males. Yeah.
And we make the best.
We run the world.
But yeah, now, like, again, I'm blessed to have a really good team and really passionate people.
And they always say, like, whenever I speak to people who run businesses, especially successful businesses, they're always like, hire people better than you.
Yeah.
Hire people that have better skill sets in that area as you and would do a better job than you. And I think that's so key.
Yeah, you will not succeed thinking that you will be able to do everything.
Yeah.
That's just impossible.
Yeah.
One thing that's just a fact is Hoodrich has been way bigger than me from years ago. Like in terms of, like the people that are involved, they just know a lot more about their field than me. And they're a lot more knowledgeable.
Because I still get the question now, does Jay do the designs? Like, does Jay design? And I'm like, no, he never has ever sat at a computer and designed because he's not a designer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was just the vision. With a designer, it was his vision.
And that's something to like kind of clear up. I'm not a designer. Haven't sat. I can't use Photoshop. Can't use Adobe. What all the team use. I've never even attempted it. But that's because I understand where my skill set is and what I'm good at. Mm-hmm. And not trying to like be a jack of all trades.
I just had a thought, just so random, thinking back to the takeover event she did. Sorry, I'm jumping way back.
Yeah, it's cool.
Especially as we move into summer, would you ever bring them back?
Now, speaking to the team, they're planning quite a few things, but yeah, an event party is.
Yeah.
It's a big so you'll get an invite, Luce.
Oh, thanks. I'm going to be there. No, but I do think, especially for brands that have such a creative edge to them, that and it enables to bring the brand to life even more. Like as some, not necessarily your competitors, but brands that are similar to you that do those, and I see the footage, and I'm like, that just looks wicked. Like, I don't know. I was just thinking, would you do one of those? It was just.
I think that's definitely something that the team are working on.
Yeah, and. We have done like different events. Like we did that Hoops in the Hood. That was in collaboration with.
Yeah, I saw that. I knew a lot of people involved in that, obviously, because I used to
play basketball. That was so good.
That was sick. So more stuff like that internationally.
That was more for like the kids and like I was loving it.
And do you know one thing as well, like where it's got to, which always kind of I am taken back by it, is for example, I don't have any involvement in stuff like that. So I'll just go into the office. And I'll just get an update, like, this is what we're doing. This is the plan. And it's like, that is so sick. Like, I love the fact that I've got the brand to a stage where the people there, they understand the vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have involvement in it. And I just get presented what we're doing. And I'm like, aligned.
Love it.
Cool. Yeah. So that just
shows. When you know it's all in the right place.
Yeah.
And the setback, well, it wasn't really a setback, but when you went to the event with Chip,
me and my brother, actually, we went to London. There was a Lotto Boys Chip video shoot. And I was just there. I had product with me. Because back then I was like hustling, just trying to get product on, you know, whoever I could. And there was a guy, he was from London and he was on the PR scene, like doing PR or whatever. And I remember speaking to him about, you know, how can I get the brand out there. How can I get more exposure? I was speaking to him like, I might want to go into stores. And he turned around to me and he said, you know, you won't get into stores with Hoodrich because Hood's negative. You need to abbreviate Hoodrich. I just remember thinking, okay, all right, cool. I never listened to him. But yeah, it's like me and my brother speak about it all the time. Like he says, like, Jay, you could have, you know, that could have knocked your confidence. You could have actually abbreviated the word.
Imagine. And,
do you know what I mean? And I think that, like, I didn't change anything, and I've proven to myself and to people that, like, are listening or outsiders that, you know, Hoodrich went into, like, mainstream stores without having to, you know, change.
Change. And I always say, like, I always have said from the beginning, I think the name of the brand is incredible.
Yeah.
I think it's got so much meaning and context behind it without having to say anything. It's just, I've always said it, haven't I? It's
just, always.
You thought of an absolute gem.
When you first thought of that name, we were like, wow, how has nobody used this name?
Mm-hmm. Like, and trademarked.
We're like, what? Like, this is a gem.
Literally.
Have to trademark it straight away.
So, we already alluded to it earlier, but kind of like the relationship and the dynamic between Jay and Brooke and the success of Hoodrich. So you guys almost went on the back foot to put Hoodrich first. Mm. What did those sacrifices look like? Paint the picture for maybe any dreamers or whoever listening in this position.
I don't think we had any like major sacrifices. I think earlier on in our relationship, I think it was pretty much just we couldn't do what normal couples would have done at the beginning. So like traveling much, like we didn't go on our first holiday until like 4 years into our relationship. Just us two. Obviously we went, I went like on a family holiday, went on a family holiday with your mom and dad. But just us, like away, just me and Jay, we didn't do our first holiday together until my 21st birthday. And that was a surprise for me. So they're the kind of things that I'd say we sacrificed early on just because you were so focused and just pushing the brand and investing all your money into that. And
just like,
as well, like work for me and
All that sort of stuff. And just sacrifice, like living that like lifestyle.
Yeah.
That's what you see on like Instagram now. So it never started like that. You know, our friends was going away. We missed out on
a couple of
Dubai trips, man. And I never forget, I remember thinking, yo, everyone's going. 2 years in a row, we couldn't go. So
that's... And then into perspective, sorry, I just think this is so cool from like then to now, from nothing to something. You know, there's 2 years where everyone was going to Dubai and you couldn't afford it. But on your 30th birthday, you took everybody to Dubai and you covered it. And I think that is just like so family, cool. Like you remained humble. And you said in the week, you were like, I didn't want to go to Dubai because then I was on the back foot financially. You felt like you were going to be behind with work. You'd have to come home and play catch up both financially and work-wise. Mm-hmm. And you just wasn't prepared to do that.
Yeah.
And I think in the age that you guys are at, where everybody is in couples, having fun, like going on these holidays, the whole friendship group, and you were just like, no, remaining focused. Again, I think for people listening, it's discipline. Like,
Definitely.
And being so disciplined with your work ethic and thoughts. Because you could have gone.
Yeah, definitely.
But it would have been like...
you've got to choose. Like, do you want to live... Do you want to live that lifestyle now and then set you back in business? Or do you want to get... Do you want to focus on your business? So then later on, give it a couple of years, 5 years...
You're all right. But
you're fine.
That's what I'm saying. But what helped me was obviously Brooke wasn't putting any pressure on me. Do you know what I mean? I feel like sometimes females can put like pressure on their man or, you know, just hint or, you know, compare their relationship to other couples. Mm. So there was none of that. I didn't have to go through that. So it was just literally us two just locking in.
I think that was more so as well, like just because I was there from the beginning of Hoodrich before it even started, like I understood what it was taking, and because I was pretty much involved, I knew how hard he had to work on it, so I knew it wasn't possible most of the time, and I knew there had to be sacrifices. So I think I was just even both of us, I think we were fine
at the time. We probably didn't think anything of it. It's just like, we can't go, can't do this, can't do that. I also missed out on loads of like lads holidays.
Yeah.
Couldn't go. But it is what it is, man. It's just like.
But I think that's a huge message, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge message, probably more than you think it is. And when we were speaking in the week, you were saying, and you looked in the camera, you probably will do it again. I don't want to tie to this, but you were like, don't get caught up on, you know, people on Instagram when you see the flexes and the watches.
Yeah.
You're like, you actually never know if that's like rented or borrowed, and you never know the meaning behind it. And you've always said like, I'm never going to get ahead of myself. Like, I don't care if I was driving the most beat up car. I don't care if I didn't
have. And we loved that stuff back then. Like we had friends around us that had nice things as well. And, you know, like latest cars and all that kind of stuff. And we were just like, that stuff is nice. And one day that will be us. But it's just not, we understood that it just wasn't then.
Yeah.
And we had to work our way up. And
like my little cousins, they was in the office the other day, and I was telling them that I didn't have my first designer clothing or piece till I was 25 years old. Had no designer before that. Now, there's probably people listening that are younger than 25 that might own a designer t-shirt, bag or anything. I was literally, and do you know what? That was my first thing that I bought was like a Louis side bag.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And not to say that you couldn't have treated yourself to one, because we definitely, like in my position, I could have, and in your position, you could have, but it was just your priorities, like just getting your priorities in order and just investing that money into something that's more worthwhile and is going to make an impact on your future in a positive way. Whereas buying designer before you've even thought about doing something for your business or working on yourself or getting a good job, not always just about having your own business, even like scaling up in like a 9-to-5 or getting in that position. Context. Could be anything. Yeah.
Such an important message. Cause I think a lot of people, maybe even our age, are still lost in that. And definitely people younger who are, unfortunately now we're all consumed by social media in this generation. I think it's such a huge message, because a lot of people get lost in it and they have nothing really.
Definitely. I think, you know, everything we see on social media is not real. You gotta be able to kind of take everything with a pinch of salt. You see people with nice like cars, watches, houses, like there's so much cap on the internet. Like, people could have borrowed watches, could have borrowed jewelry, could have rented cars. So just, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. Not everything's made out to
focus on the bigger things.
Yeah.
And to people watching this podcast, Jay, just kind of, as I say, are a dreamer and would love to follow in your footsteps. Not necessarily, doesn't have to be a streetwear brand. It could be anything. What's like one piece of advice that you would look down the camera and tell them that you think is the most important to you?
One piece of advice is a little bit difficult, but I think...
Or like a...
Yeah,
a
I just mixture. Think... I think success starts in the mind. So I think you need to work on your mindset, how you think. Get rid of a victim mentality and, you know, understand that if you have a victim mentality, it's not going to do anything for you. Understand that to become successful is going to take, you know, a lot of things, hard work, discipline, dedication, sacrifice. All those things are cliche, but it is real, and that's what it takes. But yeah, I just think that this generation has a lot of they have a victim mentality. And I just think that you won't be successful with that. So you need to stop saying, stop saying that you can't do something and start thinking of ways of how you can just change the way you think. Yeah.
And what would you say, Brooklyn, just from someone who has ridden the wave for 10 plus years and has been not only super involved, but also able to watch from like more of a bird's eye view?
I feel like patience is a very key trait.
Element to have.
So I think definitely being patient, and communication is also a big thing, because in like our relationship as well, there'd be times where we've had to speak on communication, because Jay would be out working. I'd understand why he'd be out working in the office till late. But it's also like, just pick up the phone and you know, just communicate that so then I understand.
Mm-hmm. Jamal.
Yeah. I've got better.
No dream or goal is ever too big. And that was coming back to your mood board that you had and that you created in the early stages of business. You just obviously created this mood board and everything on there now. When we looked back, fast forward, like how many years ago was that? Like probably like 6-7 years.
Yeah, I made that.
Fast forward now to this day, it's like you've ticked everything off that mood board.
And that's actually crazy.
It's taken you 7 years to achieve everything. Those big dreams. And at that time, to us, when we was looking at that mood board, we were like, wow, like
they're big dreams.
They're big dreams. And maybe it will never happen, or maybe it will. We don't know, but it has. And it's like you just have to continue at it and keep going.
That's the power of the subconscious mind.
Yeah.
I do feel like everything that I've got or achieved, I've attracted subconsciously.
Mm. Yeah. You always knew what you wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
Love that.
Including Missy here.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, I think even from the last podcast that we did in the week, and this one, I think your story is incredible. I think it will empower a lot of people. I think your humbleness and your dedication to your work is something that lacks in this day and age. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important.
Mm.
I think everything nowadays seems achievable overnight. People look for that overnight success. It exists sometimes, but more time it takes the hard work.
Yeah.
And I think your story shows just that.
Yeah.
So first of all, congratulations
on all your success and all your hard work
and what you created for you and your family, for the city, for the UK. It's absolutely incredible. And as I always say, he's so humble. I don't even think he realizes
what he's done.
We're all so proud of you. Thank you for coming on this podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for sharing your story. I know you're a very private person and I know you haven't really ever shared too much, but as you are now in this new stage of business, in this new stage of life, I hope to see a lot more of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope to see you sharing your story elsewhere with different people. If you've made it to the end, thank you so much for watching. Thank you, Brooklyn, as well, for coming along. I don't like that I've just said that, because you haven't just come along. You are actually a huge part of this story, this brand, and this success. And I think it's beautiful that you also have this incredible, romantic, gorgeous relationship as well. I think it's the fairy tale. So yes, if you guys have any questions or you maybe want to know a little bit more, please pop any comments in the box below or DM me. I can always put something together and hopefully send it over to Jay, and I'm sure he will get back and I can respond to you. Thank you so much for watching. Please like, share, comment, and subscribe, whatever you can do to support the cause. And we will be back next week with another episode. So thank you so much. Take care.
Bye.